Welcome to our Agile Tales, where we share the various successes and trials we've encountered as we navigate corporate levels and political waters to transform the business to be adaptable to this forever changing world.
Today, we're starting a new discussion focusing on beyond budgeting. We're excited to bring in a special guest who pioneered the beyond budgeting movement, Bjarte Bosnes. Bjarte has a long international career in both finance and HR. He is an author, a business speaker, and the winner of a Harvard Business Review Management Innovation Award. Let's welcome Bjarte as we bring him on to explore beyond budgeting. Hello, Bjarte. Thanks for agreeing to come on to our podcast. We have tons of questions for you. I hope we don't scare you and that you're ready for us.
I'm ready.
Okay, so let's dive right in. Now, since it is called Beyond Budgeting, let's talk about the budget process. How do the Beyond Budgeting companies do budgeting? I mean, in traditional companies, there are budgets for various initiatives. For example, budget for innovation, budget for maintenance projects, etc. Basically, these are like buckets of money for different initiatives. Now, with Beyond Budgeting, there's no budget, right? No buckets. But those initiatives remain. And so how do those initiatives get the money that they need? Or do they just grab as much as they can, as quickly as they can?
If we can take one step back before I answer that question, because yes, it is called Beyond Budgeting, but it is actually a somewhat misleading name. Because the purpose of Beyond Budgeting is not necessarily actually to get rid of budgets. The purpose is to create organizations that are more adaptive, more dynamic, more human, more agile, if you want. In order to make that happen, we need to change traditional management. And at the core of traditional management, you find not just the budgeting process, but also the budgeting mindset. So that's where the name is coming from, but this is so much broader. It has also something to do with budgets, because budgets is a big part of the problem. And the way you phrased your question, it seems like you think about budgets mostly as cost budgets. But the way we look upon it is it's cost budgets, it's also investment budgets, cash flow budgets, revenue budgets, profit and loss budgets. So it's the full kind of full thing. Your question was, how do companies manage cost without the traditional budget? There are actually many ways of doing that, which I will come back to. But in order to get to a different way, you need to do something first. And that has to do with asking yourself, why do you budget? And everybody I've asked that question come up with three different reasons. Budgets are used for target setting, financial targets, sales targets, production targets. Budgets are also used to try to understand what next year could look like in terms of cash flow, financial capacity. So it has a forecasting purpose as well. And last but not least, back to your question, the budget is also a resource allocation mechanism, handing out bags of money to the organization on costs and on investments, OPEX and CAPEX, as it's sometimes called. And, you know, it might seem very efficient to solve all three in one process and one set of numbers, like you do in a budget, but that is also actually the problem. Let me give you an example. We are moving into a budget process, and upstairs, corporate finance wants to understand next year's cash flow. They start on the revenue side and ask responsible people here, what's your best number for next year? But everybody knows that the number I'm sending upstairs will come back to me as a sales target for next year, maybe with a bonus attached. And that insight might actually do something to the level of numbers submitted. Moving to the cost side, the same people, other people are asked, what are your best number for next year? But everybody knows that this is my only shot at getting access to resources for next year. And some might also remember that 20% cut from last year. And that memory and that insight might also do something to the level of numbers submitted. And I can see you nodding and smiling, because this is something everybody recognizes. And it might seem a bit funny, but it's also a bit sad because not just because it destroys the quality of numbers, but also because it stimulates behaviors that are borderline unethical, right? The lowballing, the gaming, the sandbagging, the resource hoarding, the internal negotiations, all the things that we don't want to see in our organization. On the other hand, I'm not necessarily blaming people behaving like that because they simply respond to the system we have designed for them to operate in. So this is not about fixing people, it's about fixing systems, and that will change people's behaviors. Good news, there is a very simple solution in Beyond Budgeting. We simply say that you can still do these three things, but you should do them in three separate processes because these are different things. A target is an aspiration, it's what we want to happen. While a forecast is an expectation, it is what we think will happen, whether we like what we see or not. And last but not least, resource allocation is about optimizing in the best possible way what is often scarce resources. And by separating, we can then, first of all, I mean, a target and a forecast can be different numbers, which they maybe should be. But more importantly, we can now start to improve each of the three in ways impossible when it was all bundled in one process and or in one set of numbers. So we can have great discussions about how can we set more intelligent, more effective targets that really motivates and ignites people. How can we get the politics and the bias out of forecasting? And last but not least, I'm finally coming to your question. How can we manage cost in a different way? In a different way compared to what a certain Mr. James O. McKinsey offered us 100 years ago when he invented budgeting. It's actually quite old management technology we talk about. I know this is a long answer, but it was a big question. Let me give you some practical examples of alternatives to the traditional detailed annual budget where you sit in the autumn the year before and decide everything, exactly how much shall we spend next year, and exactly split on all these accounts, salary, overtime, consultants, travel, steel, power, whatever you know, kind of business you're in. And often these budgets are divided into monthly budgets. So there's a lot of packaging going on in a traditional budget process. This is simply meaningless because we can't make all these decisions that early. And we shouldn't make all these decisions that detailed. And we shouldn't make all these decisions at such a high organizational level. So there are many problems playing out here. What we recommend in Beyond Budgeting is if we start with the cost side, operating costs, and then we move to bigger investments, CapEx afterwards. On operating costs, there are a number of alternatives. One alternative is what we call a burn rate guiding. So simply, yes, there is a number in the range of a million, 10 million, whatever. That is a guiding about what kind of activity level to operate at until something else is decided. Within that, full autonomy. So big difference already here between a traditional budget and this burn rate guiding. But if it is difficult to know what should that number be, then you can, for instance, move over to thinking in relative terms. Some companies operate with unit cost metrics, so you can spend more if you produce more, you can spend more if you sell more, and vice versa. So even more self-regulating. You can go further, make it even more self-regulating by saying that there is not a cost per unit kind of metric, but your cost per unit should be competitive. For instance, versus peers or versus competition or whatever, so even more self-regulating. If you have internal units who are true profit centers, they can fully control their cost side and their revenue side, then if these units have a bottom line target instead, then that is also a way of managing cost. But it might be okay to spend more if what they spend is what we should call good cost. Because good cost is not the problem. Good cost creates value. As long as we have the financial capacity, we should spend as much good cost as possible. It's the bad cost we want to get rid of because they don't create value. And I recall when this distinction was introduced in the company I used to work for, Equinor, then the question, of course, came, well, that's fine, but what is good cost and what is bad cost? Our CFO, he simply responded that you guys out there, you know better than me what is good cost and bad cost in this company. The last alternative here, and what I'm describing now is actually the Equinor, formerly Statoil's model for managing costs. The last alternative is nothing at all. No budgets, no target, no nothing. The only numbers you have here are actual accounting numbers coming out of the accounting system. And then we simply look at trends. And if it looks okay, we do nothing. If it looks a bit strange, then of course we investigate. And almost all the time, there are good reasons why it looks a bit strange. For instance, going up, it could be a dosis of good cost, no problem. But, and this is important, we might also come across managers who consciously or unconsciously abuse the trust that lies in this model. And the only thing you know, if you show trust in an organization, someone will abuse it, right? So that's not the issue. It will happen. The issue is how you respond. Because the easy but wrong response for a CEO or a CFO is to say that, hey, this trust thing doesn't work. Look what happened here. Look what happened here. And then everybody back to the old process because somebody abused it. Very easy, but the wrong thing to do. The right thing to do takes a little bit more leadership because then you need to talk to these guys. And you should have that very firm talk and let it have the necessary consequences, if necessary, right? This is not about being soft. It's about not putting everybody in jail because somebody did something wrong. So that's the model on operating cost. Before I move to investments, let me stop here and ask if that was clear so far.
Actually, yes, it is. And actually, I have tons of questions on the three purposes of the budget, the target, the forecast, and the resource allocation.
Before we move on, if I could add on quickly, because I talked about operating costs, but not investments. So investments has a slightly different nature, investment costs, because they often have, and in Equinor, I mean, investments, there's a lot of concrete and steel, and it's quite physical, building offshore wind platforms or offshore platforms. Here, instead of having a detailed annual investment budget where you again sit in the autumn and decide everything, exactly how much to invest, exactly split on these projects, and then you hand out next year's investment money, again, too early. Instead, there is a process based on a very simple principle. The bank is always open. So the line can always forward a project for approval at any time. Whether you get a yes or no depends on two things. How good is your project against the criteria that it is evaluated against, financial, non-financial? And second, can we afford it as things looks today? So this is Beyond Budgeting's version of continuous delivery, not of software functionality, but of decisions and funds. So dynamic resource allocation, this is often called. One final additional way of managing cost, which is very simple, is transparency. There is a Norwegian company called Miles. No budgets, no targets, by the way. If you work for Miles, you can buy whatever PC you want, as expensive as you want, replace it as often as you want. You can attend, so no PC budgets. You can attend whatever training, seminar you want, no training budgets, no travel budgets. But it's not an anarchy. When you have bought that PC, when you have returned from that training, you need to post on the internet what you did and the cost of it. So transparency is their only control mechanism, and they are very happy with it. There's just one small concern, not a big one, but a small one. And what do you think that is? It sounds a bit soft, doesn't it, compared to the good old budget? Nope, that is not the concern. The concern is, could this mechanism be actually too effective? Are people buying good enough pieces? Are they taking enough training? Right? This is a very powerful control mechanism with this transparency. People can see, right? But if it is a problem, I would call it a luxury problem. I mean, isn't it nicer to be able to encourage people to buy better pieces and take more training than to bang them on the head with a budget and say, no, no, no?
That's a very good concern to have.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was my long answer on a big question. Over to you.
Thank you so very much. Wow. I'm going to lay aside all the other questions regarding budget at this moment and want to move on to managing, because as you have talked about already, it's all about the mindset. It's all about the way we manage. It's not how we think about it. So I want to dive a little deeper on that. This is obviously a change in management. It's a management innovation. However, I have worked in enough companies and have dealt with enough executives and boards. That is not necessarily something they want to take on. So how do you go about getting the company to actually innovate in management?
Well, first of all, this is an interesting paradox because, I mean, the same companies and the same managers, they love technology innovation, right? They want to be leading edge, in the forefront, better than everybody else. Wonderful. But when it comes to management innovation, that is not great, right? That's scary. Kicking out the budget, are you crazy? Right? So the consequence is that it's very crowded on the technology innovation arena because everybody is on that arena in some form or shape. When you move to the management innovation arena, that is not yet, and as I say yet, a crowded place because it is scary. But this is actually good news for brave companies to explore, embrace also this kind of innovation, because you can get just as much innovation out of performance, out of management innovation, as you can get from technology innovation. I mean, if you take the company I just talked about, Miles, they are very open. There's nothing unique in what they provide as such, but they find their competitive edge in how they lead and manage. The more we can get managers to understand the enormous potential that lies in management innovation, the easier, the more you increase the appetite. Of course, the fact that it is still a minority of companies going this way, even if something seems to be happening this day, because the interest is simply exploding. And by the way, the pandemic has definitely done something here. The pandemic is interesting because if you think about traditional management, it's actually built on two assumptions. Number one, people can't be trusted. And number two, the future is predictable and plannable. And we've had many other crises. Take the finance crisis some years ago. That basically only challenged this assumption that the future is predictable and plannable. But the pandemic has also challenged the issue of trusting people. I mean, through all the homework and home office, companies have been forced to trust their employees, whether they wanted it or not. And guess what? It worked. So that has also been an eye-opener, I think, for some executives. I think we're starting to get into a good circle where there's some peer pressure building up. Because the moment you see the competitors doing this, that tend to have an effect. It's not my preferred kind of trigger, but if anything else doesn't work, then fine. And last but not least, something that also has happened lately over the last year, is that the big consulting companies are getting interested. The Boston Consulting Group, Deloitte, Accenture, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and so on, they are getting interested. Of course, these companies have their agendas. That's just the way it is. Even if I have mixed feelings here, these companies, they have channels and muscles that we don't have. They have access to executives that sometimes we don't have. And they are going to use it. So I'd rather kind of work with them to make sure that they position beyond budgeting as what it really is, and not as a narrow mechanical rolling forecast thing, which I've seen in some cases. The fact that these guys are getting interested, another kind of indicator that something is brewing, something is boiling here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I want to dive a little deeper on the same topic, because you mentioned it is scary. It is scary for management. So they need to be brave, right? Now, of course, the pandemic changes, as you said, fundamentally, whether they can trust the employees and whether the future is predictable. Those two fundamentals are shaken. That's great. Now, perhaps people are looking into the future to say, well, when the pandemic is over, or we're getting over the pandemic, a lot of companies, a lot of management that I saw so far is they wanted to go back to where it was, how it used to work. It felt like the last 18 plus months, whatever they have learned, either is forgotten or they just sort of shove it aside. So are there any ways of convincing or helping management to be brave, to build the courage, I mean, have some guts and backbone, right, to actually want to do what is harder and to make the tough decisions that actually benefit the company, not just themselves?
I do meet a lot of skeptical executives and managers and finance people. When they look at the 12 beyond budgeting principles, I mean, they find it big, scary. In a way, if you're completely cold on this, I can understand that. But then the good news then is that, do you recall the budget separation I was talking about? Then I recommend that, okay, if this is too big and scary, then start here. This is pure logic. You will understand the problems with combining this in one process, one set of numbers. What's scary with separating and being able to improve each one? Actually, then you are still doing all the things the budget tried to do for you in a better way. So once you have separated, once you start on those improvement discussions, you are actually on the journey. Because at one point, when you discuss targets, you will move into discussions about what really motivates people. When you discuss cost management, you will at one point move into the question of, well, if we say we trust people, why do we need detailed travel budgets? So this is a kind of very organic, nice backdoor into bigger and important discussions. Among the many, many companies I've helped to get started, this is where we have started. Some kind of take it, make some improvements and it works better. Some are even braver. They all tend to be get braver along the way because, I mean, you change things and it turns out that it wasn't scary, it works, and the appetite for doing more improves. So I talked about improving ways of setting targets. Well, the next step is a discussion about, do we need all these targets? Right. If you look at Miles, as the company we just looked at, they have operated since they were born without targets, but with a lot of great performance. So again, that is one nice way of getting started. The final kind of thing I want to add here is the enormous amount of agile transformation journeys that is taking place these days. It seems like every respectable company is on an agile transformation journey in some form or shape. And that's fine, but they all discover at one point, and often late, that they will never succeed unless you also address the stuff we talk about in beyond budgeting and not just limited to the budget part. Beyond budgeting is, in a way, the missing piece in an agile transformation. And there is a simple reason for that, because agile originally was not developed as a way to run an organization. It was originally meant to improve software development, and it did wonders. But as we were scaling agile, moving into business agility, these holes became more and more evident. These holes beyond budgeting are filling. So it's a beautiful match between agile and beyond budgeting. If the term business agility has existed when we started out 25 years ago, maybe that is what we would have been called today, because that's basically what it is.
Exactly, exactly. Now I'm curious, because the trust and transparency that you mentioned multiple times already, it's absolutely crucial. Now I'm curious, how do we know that we manage too much?
Well, first of all, it's a fact that we do manage too much. I love this Peter Drucker quote, most of what we call management is about making it difficult for people to do their job. But I mean, how do we know? We know it through what servers are telling us about engagement. We know through what servers are telling us about the enormous bureaucracy and the cost of it. So there are so much evidence that it's not just that we manage too much, but we also that we manage in the wrong way. So I don't think it's the lack of evidence that is the issue here.
Yeah, indeed. Maybe let me flip it a little bit, because obviously, making the tough decisions to benefit the company not only requires one to have fresh information and authority to act on it, but it also needs to have a positive value set. So the flip side of managing too much, it's really how do you teach or instill this positive value set or incentivize the mindset change from the me first mindset or what I want mindset
Well, of course, there are many kind of angles into this. I think an important one is around recruitment. Again, take Miles. The process they put most effort into is actually recruitment to make sure they get the right people on board. Because the very simple philosophy, if we have the right people on board, the rest follows by itself. But most companies, they already have a bunch of employees on board. By the way, it's interesting because companies all claim that we only recruit the best. But the moment people are in the door, then companies make their best to make most of them average through the performance rating, right? But again, back to your question, I think the way you change behaviors, culture, thinking is very much through changing your management processes. Process drives behavior. For instance, if you want to build and reinforce trust, well, take away the travel budgets and be very specific about it. We do it because we trust you, right? So you're kind of connecting what you do on the management process side with something that you probably already are saying on the leadership side. Because I think that most companies are, in the words they use, they say we trust people and all the nice stuff. The problem is that the management processes has a very different message. And this is key in Beyond Budgeting. That's why there are 6 leadership principles and 6 management process principles with a strong focus on creating coherence between the two. Consistency between what is said on leadership and what is done through management processes. So when you talk about trust, when you talk about autonomy and so on, I mean, the way to execute it goes via your management processes. Right? So it's what you do here that in a way makes your words to be believed or not. So coherence here is key, and processes drives culture.
Then how do we prevent punishing everybody at a company when just, you know, a few folks may have made a mistake, right? When you have the transparency, when you have the trust, as you said, there will be people who take advantage of it, or, you know, unintentionally sometimes, they didn't even know that they've done something wrong. So how do we prevent just punishing everyone just because a few folks, you know, have made
Now, actually, as I mentioned, I mean, that is a problem in traditional management. Maybe because it's the easiest thing to do, because you can just send out that mail or whatever. You don't need to talk to anyone. The way to avoid it is by not doing it. I think one part of this is when you get started on the journey, then be very explicit that trust will be abused. It will happen, so that you are prepared when it happens, instead of kind of panicking when it happens and then thinking about how to react. Think through upfront and make your decision already upfront when it happens. I will not put everybody in jail. I think that increases the chance of that happening when trust is abused.
Yeah, indeed. Now, I have tons of other questions. I don't think that in the remaining time we're going to fit all those in. So I am going to thank Beata for giving us the time and to answer our questions today. If it is possible, let's get Beata back for our next round of questions. But thank you so very much, Beata.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
That's all the time we have today. Next time, we'll pick up where we left off as we continue to explore Beyond Budgeting with Beata Forsnes. You don't want to miss it.
Thank you so much for listening to our Agile Tales. Feel free to ping us on our agiletales.com.